Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Show, the flagship edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Drew Dinkmeyer. I'm here with Ricky Sanders today. We're going to walk through the 12-game main slate. Two teams on bye this week, the San Francisco 49ers and the New York Jets, so we won't be covering them. We won't be covering those primetime and showdown games. If you want showdown analysis, make sure to check out all the premium content we have at dailyroto.com. You can use the promo code LAUNCH for 10% off. Ricky, how are you doing on this wonderful Thursday of week four?
I'm good, and I know no one wants to hear about my fantasy team, but we're going to talk about some of this week's top pickups here. I'm excited about this Giants-Washington game, both in seasonal and this week, so I'm feeling pretty good. I'm hoping we get a rookie-rookie matchup, but I guess we got to keep watching the injury reports to see whether or not that's a legitimate thing.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be at that game live. Really? I usually don't attend football games live, but I have some friends in town that are, you know, Giants fans and Redskins fans, and decided to figure it out and get to the game on Sunday. So, yeah, it'll be fun for me. But we will get to that game in a second. Let's start with the Oakland Raiders traveling to the Indianapolis Colts. As always, I'll tackle a little bit of the injury situations that we're monitoring, and then Ricky, you can kind of talk us through plays that are interesting to you. On the injury side for this game, I think the biggest question mark is going to be T.Y. Hilton's availability. He left last week's game for Indianapolis and then missed practice on Wednesday. It's a hamstring issue, I believe, that he's dealing with, or a quad issue, sorry, that he's dealing with, and those are always tricky for wide receivers. I don't expect we'll see him practice much this week. And the only question for me is whether he'll be like questionable game time decision or he'll be ruled out early. Right now, our projections are assuming that he won't be able to play. And that's a big deal for the Colts because he's really dominated the team in market share early in the season. They also might be without Darius Leonard, who still was missing practice due to concussion issues. It looks like Malik Hooker also sat out practice, so a lot of injuries for the Colts to deal with. The Raiders are relatively healthy. They have a few injuries like return specialists and stuff like that. Not a big deal. Ricky, does this game interest you from a DFS perspective?
So the answer is definitely yes. This Raiders team is graded, according to Pro Football Focus, as the worst defense in the league, which I kind of found a little bit hard to believe. But they're definitely a team I want to use offensive pieces against without T.Y. Hilton. The question is, where do you go? And I'm leaning kind of towards this being more of like an MME situation, although I think Paris Campbell is a guy that I would have interest in this scenario. The question is, you know, like last year, if there was no T.Y. Hilton, we certainly would have been on Ebron with Andrew Luck. I'm just not sure that the connection is quite as strong with Jacoby Brissett. I would guess as we get to the red zone, though, you know, T.Y. Hilton did catch a touchdown last week, that would be the Ebron territory. So I'm thinking of mixing in Colts players. I just don't know if there's one that I feel great about as like a single entry, three max, or even cash game kind of guy. It's just a team that I want exposure to.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to project if you get T.Y. Hilton out. And as a result, you won't see anyone really pop in our projections. And one of the reasons is because the Colts are incredible at spreading out opportunity in the absence of T.Y. Hilton. Last week, you know, Hilton played 50% of the snaps or so, basically missed the entire second half, and not a single Colts skill player played over 70% of the snaps last week. They had, in fact, they had five wide receivers and three different tight ends play more than 35% of the snaps. So it's just very difficult when they're rotating personnel so frequently to feel confident in any sort of volume projection. And as a result, that makes it so that if you are going to consider any of these options, and I think any of these secondary options are only in play if T.Y. Hilton sits, you would want to make sure, one, they're cheap, two, they have upside, and three, you're using them in the right contest. And so I agree with you that those guys would mainly be MME for me. I think the guy who would be most interesting would be Marlon Mack. Jacoby Brissett could certainly be played. I just get the vibes that from the Colts that, you know, if T.Y. Hilton's out and they're still able to kind of control game flow, they'd rather play it like Minnesota Vikings style, where they just run it over and over and over again. On the Oakland side, Darren Waller is the guy that, you know, we have to talk about. 30% market share of targets through the first 3 weeks. Even when they were getting dominated last week in Minnesota, he was a slate winning tight end just on volume alone. The price tag is now up. He's priced up in the mid fives on DraftKings. Are you interested in Darren Waller or any other Raiders in this game?
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention, because I thought it was funny, is that Calvin Ridley last week said it was really difficult to get open against this Indy defense, and yet Julio Jones was open the entire day. I was thinking, like, how you compare that to things, and I think it's kind of similar to, like, debating Drew Dinkmeyer. Like, if Mike Leone does it, Drew will often say, like, good points, and then if I'm debating him, it's impossible to win a point. So I wonder if that was, like, for Calvin Ridley yesterday or last week, and I'm wondering how that's going to pan out this week in terms of Waller and Tyrell, in terms of, you know, their zone. But they're playing from behind again, so it's really tough to be like, actually, I have no interest in Darren Waller. This is a guy who still played 90% of the snaps last week. Like you mentioned, 14 targets, only 3 for Tyrell, although I think he was dealing with a little bit of a hip issue. I mean, Waller's got to be up there in terms of your list of tight ends. I mean, the price is rising with him, but that just seems to be fair price at this point, so I have no issues with him. As for the rest of the team, I'm fine with Tyrell as like a mix-in guy. I don't really know who to like here. I think a Hunter Renfrow week is coming, and it's possible that he's the guy that is able to get open here, but I think Waller's clearly the much higher, you know, probability guy.
Yeah, the one other note I'll leave on the radio, and then we'll move on. Josh Jacobs, they had some coaching comments about wanting to get him involved in the passing game. I think that's a very important thing to keep an eye on in the next few weeks. He's had like no representation in the passing game whatsoever, and that's a huge, huge concern to value for a team that figures to be playing from behind quite a bit. Through the first 3 weeks of the season, 3 targets for Josh Jacobs. Not what you would expect given the way he was used at Alabama. That game is not in play for me in game stacks. This next one, though, Washington and the Giants, I'm shocked. I'm legitimately shocked that this game is game stackable, but I think it is. I'm shocked when I agreed to go to this game with my friends that I actually will have some fantasy value to pay attention to, but the total is up to 49. The Giants are 2.5-point favorites here. Great offensive performance last week in Daniel Jones' debut. They were able to move the ball up and down the field. Of course, Tampa Bay's defense, you know, not the best defense in the league, but they played well the first 2 weeks. So, you know, on the road, pretty good test for Daniel Jones in his first start. He seemed to pass it. In terms of news and notes in this game, there's a lot of injury situations to talk through. Obviously, the most important one from a DFS perspective is the Saquon Barkley injury. He's going to be out for quite a while. It's going to open up a lot of opportunity. The Giants didn't really work out any running backs of meaningful, competition for Wayne Gallman. So we're expecting Wayne Gallman to step into a pretty substantial role, replacing Saquon Barkley. He's obviously not nearly as talented, and so the volume probably won't be there in the way that it has been for Saquon. That should open up some targets for the receiving options, with Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard being the primary beneficiaries there. On the Washington side of the ball, Case Keenum didn't partake in practice on Wednesday with a foot issue. Coach Jay Gruden has basically said that they expect Keenum to play. We should note that Colt McCoy did practice. So I know a lot of people are excited about, hey, we might get Haskins Jones, you know, two of the rookie first-round quarterbacks. But I'm not sure if, even if Keenum wasn't available, if it wouldn't be Colt McCoy kind of coming in, just because I think they want to hold off Haskins until they get to a little bit softer part of the schedule. They still have the Patriots in front of them. And tight end Jordan Reed remains out with a concussion. Some concerns about whether he's going to be able to play again at all. Those are the big skill position injuries. You led off with this game, Ricky, so you're clearly excited about it. Get into it. What are the plays that you're looking at from this game?
Well, I just think that, like you mentioned, Wayne Gallman not going to get the kind of volume that Saquon Barkley got, which means this is going to be a Daniel Jones situation. And I saw some other people break it down that it could be similar to like a Josh Allen from last year as to where he got going. They stopped, you know, using the running back as maybe as much as they should have in LeSean McCoy. And I wonder if that's the situation with Gallman, is that they just, you know, rely heavily on Daniel Jones. And it's pretty clear we know that Daniel, where he's going with the ball. At least if you look at, you know, last week, 9 targets for Sterling Shepard, 8 for Evan Ingram. I think both are fantastic plays once again. I mean, you saw what a I don't know, whatever you want to call Taylor Gabriel, receiver, did to them last week. I feel pretty good that Sterling Shepard is one of the higher floor receivers of the week. I'm just not sure what to do with Wayne Gallman in Giants stacks because he is so cheap. Normally, I don't want to use a running back with a stack on a team if they're not going to score 40 points unless they are really cheap. So I am really torn on what to do with a $4,600 Gallman. I'm a little bit concerned that he is not heavily involved, but I'm wondering what you're going to do with Gallman, because I think he's the most puzzling player of the entire week.
Yeah, I think, you know, whenever you get cheap running backs coming into opportunity, you should be excited about utilizing them. And I think there's limited competition for Wayne Gallman here. The price tag is pretty good, so I feel like he's a very good play. I think your question comes more to whether you would include him in kind of stacks or groups with Daniel Jones. And I think that one is a little bit more tricky, primarily because, as you said, you either want the team to be able to score a ton of points, which, look, the Giants have an implied total around 26, which is really high. So there's the out for that. But you also want the player to be involved in the passing game. And that, I don't know. I think Gallman, you don't have a big sample of Daniel Jones in terms of how much he's going to be using the running backs. And it's very difficult to compare someone to Saquon Barkley in terms of the market share that they can that Saquon takes over. So my early lean is that I wouldn't include him in kind of my rules as one of the, like, at least one or two of to play, but I wouldn't exclude him from the groups, meaning I would be comfortable making some Daniel Jones stacks that involved him plus one of the receiving or tight end options, and I'd be very comfortable if I had Daniel Jones stacks that didn't involve them. And Daniel Jones, the other thing that I'd note is that rushing upside looks like he's going to be a guy that can be stacked single and not necessarily needing to be double, because he can kind of get there on his own, similar to a Russell Wilson type in terms of fantasy. So I think that's interesting. He tested pretty athletically well, and he showed off the wheels, obviously, in the game-winning touchdown there. On the Washington side of the ball, you know, I think it's kind of going to be the same old situation with Washington, where Terry McLaurin's still really interesting. He's still really affordable, especially on DraftKings at 4,500. I think he will certainly be the primary guy that, if you're considering stacks in this game, that you're bringing it back with. He's 6,300 on FanDuel, which isn't a bad price tag at all. I do think the public's going to be on him because he's been so successful for the first three games of the season. And so I think he's going to be one of the highest owned wide receivers on the slate, which is a little bit concerning. Like if I told you 3 weeks ago that this Giants-Washington game was going to be the chalkiest fantasy game on the slate, you'd have thought I was totally insane. So I think we do need to take it with a little bit of perspective on how much our expectations change early into the season, and especially when ownership is going to be there, be a little bit careful with it. I think Chris Thompson is a reasonable play, just given the volume of opportunity he's meeting, but he's a tough guy to get behind in tournaments when the price tag starts to creep up into the fours and fives, simply because, you know, he's not unlikely to score touchdowns, so you really need the receiving volume to get there. And I still think, like, Vernon Davis and Paul Richardson are okay because they're so cheap. But I think what's really going to be popular is going to be, like, Daniel Jones plus Evan Ingram or Shepard or Gallman or two of those plus McLaurin. I think those are actually going to be some chalky builds, which is weird to say.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Trey Quinn's name, because he's minimum priced on DraftKings. And, like, you look at this target share for the Redskins so far. I mean, 24 targets for McLaurin, 20 for Trey Quinn, and you've got him at the absolute minimum. And I'm looking at our UFC projections earlier in the week, which obviously are subject to change. If you've got a 34% Terry McLaurin and a 1.5% owned Trey Quinn on the run back, to me, Trey Quinn is that guy, especially because he's minimum priced. So you could still take down a large tournament if he goes like 5 for 50, because you're opening up some salary elsewhere and you just need the other guys to hit. So if that's the difference in ownership between those two, give me the wide receiver 2 here at literally no cost.
Ricky, I am so proud of you. I cannot tell you how proud I am of you that you are forgoing the rookie wide receiver with all the hype that's performed well recently, and you're saying that ownership is too much. I'd rather take the cheaper version at 1/30th of the ownership. Ricky, I'm so proud. This is a breakthrough moment in our relationship.
It feels like I got open versus the Colts.
Let's move it on to Carolina and Houston. The Panthers visiting the Texans. The Panthers, about 4.5 point underdogs here, taking on Houston with Kyle Allen once again. Last week we talked about this, where I was a little bit confused by the spread and the total in the Carolina Arizona game, and I thought the two in combination made no sense whatsoever. I thought either the total had to be way higher or Arizona had to be bigger favorites, because I thought there should be some uncertainty around the Kyle Allen situation. He made me look very foolish there. At least I got the total part right, I guess. But he went off against Arizona. Now they're only 4 point underdogs on the road in Houston, and Houston's a team that went into LA, beat the Chargers, almost beat the Saints in week one with a healthy Drew Brees. They've played like top tier football, and they're basically like, the odds makers are basically saying, hey, these two teams aren't very different, right? Because usually you get about 3 points for home field. So they're saying on a neutral field, essentially, Houston would be like a point better. That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
In terms of the injury situations, tight end Greg Olsen, limited participant in practice on Wednesday. That's not something to be concerned about. These older guys are almost always going to be limited or miss time during the course of the season on Wednesdays. So, just keep an eye on it through the course of the week, but I don't think there's anything really to worry about there. And there's nothing else from a skill position player. Both of these teams are fairly healthy. One thing I'll note on Houston's side that we did see last week, obviously the tight ends were the ones who blew up in the box score with Darren Fells and Jordan Akins. But that was also a little bit of a shift in snap percentage. They played a little bit more to tight end. They also played a little bit more Kenny Stills ahead of Kike Kute. So I don't know if we're seeing a shift there. But, for all my Kenny Stills best ball shares, that's great. For all my Kike Kute dynasty and best ball shares, that's horrible. What say you about this game, Ricky? Because I'm confused by the spread once again with the Carolina game.
Yeah, I mean, I still have faith in Deshaun Watson here. I think those stacks are what I have the most interest in. What I'm not sure what to do is where to run it back with Carolina here, because we have both their receivers as pretty good values, and I think they both were over 50 in a touchdown last week. You had a very productive week from Greg Olsen. I just wonder with this pass rush if it's going to be a similarly good week for Allen, or it's a spot where I want to be underweight, and I'm leaning towards the second. So if you have Watson, very likely you're pairing him with DeAndre Hopkins. And one thing I noticed about this Houston team is they are a well below average run defense so far. I mean, Pro Football Focus has them graded 31st. I think that makes sense if you've watched them. And so I don't think I'm going to limit myself to, like, if Deshaun Watson, you have to have Christian McCaffrey running it back. I think I'm going to be, heavy on Christian McCaffrey either way. I think it's one of the scenarios, though, where I'm going to set a rule where you boost him in lineups with Deshaun Watson, because I would prefer he be the primary back on the other side, because I think he's the guy I have the most faith here. I know that's not the most fun game stack sort of, game flow when you're running it back with a running back, but he catches enough passes that he could, score a long receiving touchdown, and it can still prove to be somewhat of a fast-moving game. You got both these teams projected over 60 plays. I don't know. Do you like the pass catchers on Carolina better than I do? Because I think they're a team that I may move to be underweight on.
No, I do like Carolina. I like Carolina's skill players quite a bit. I was very high on pretty much all of them during the course of best ball season, which unfortunately led me to a lot of Cam Newton during best ball season, which is not going great. I think their price tags are pretty affordable. Like Curtis Samuel's below 5,000 on DraftKings. DJ Moore is a reasonable price tag, and I don't think these guys are going to come with much ownership. Samuel below 6,000 on FanDuel is a really good price tag too. And obviously Samuel's a guy that can kind of get there all in one play. And so one of the things I do like about this game from a game stack perspective is each side has a few players that can break the game open and speed it up very quickly, right? Like Will Fuller, you hit one of those deep balls to Will Fuller, you hit one of those deep balls to Curtis Samuel, and all of a sudden this game is a track meet. So I think I am interested in this game, especially with the early ownership projections on some of these secondary pieces. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is going to garner a ton of ownership each and every week. It's going to be very difficult to ever consider him a low-owned piece, but that's fine. Like he's a running back with a ton of volume, not super concerned there. But Hopkins probably coming in under 10%. Will Fuller probably coming in under 5%. Same with DJ more, maybe Curtis Samuel even in that range. I think there's actually a lot of plays that interest me in this game. I think this is one of the sneakier game stacks on the slate. Let's move it over to New England and Buffalo, a battle of 3-0 undefeated teams into Buffalo. I'm sure Leone is super pumped for the Bills' start to the season here. In terms of this game from an injury perspective, you know, the first thing that I want to keep my eye on is Julian Edelman. He was back at practice at Wednesday. He left at the end of the first half last week after compiling a huge first half. Really left a lot of fantasy points on the table for me and many other of our subscribers, as we are very, very high in Julian Edelman. The Patriots, as usual, have a ton of guys that are, you know, limited practice early in the week, so we'll see how that develops. But Rex Burkhead was on that list, as well as both tight ends, Ryan Izzo and Matt Lacoste. I think these are situations to just kind of monitor early on. It'll be interesting to see what Rex Burkhead's role evolves into with James White back in the mix, I assume, after the birth of his child. And then on the Bills side, no Devin Singletary or Tyler Kroft on Wednesday. Both of those guys missed last week, and obviously we saw a lot more TJ Yeldon alongside Frank Gore. It didn't seem like Frank Gore really took any more of the volume than he had before with Singletary. It seemed like Yeldon just kind of slid right into that role. So I don't think there'll be any sort of huge boost there. Obviously, it's a different set of circumstances this week for Buffalo, with an implied total around 18 last week. They were about a touchdown higher. Patriots about a touchdown favorite here on the road. Does this game interest you, Ricky?
Not really. I mean, you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but I've been on Buffalo defense since preseason. I mean, they had that stud defensive tackle fall to them in the draft. You look at their passing yards a game, 225 is about what I expected. They've been a tough run defense. This Patriots team now has three backs to deal with. I think Julian Edelman from the Patriots is the guy that I kind of feel best about having some exposure to. But on the Buffalo side, I'm not sure what to do either, because this New England team has looked like the best defense on the planet, and yet they've played the Jets with their second or third string quarterback, and they've played Miami, who just everyone is going to roll. So I'm not sure they're as good as they've shown either, but it's not enough for me to like want to go bullish on Josh Allen or ride any of the running backs. So this is just not a game that I personally have a ton of interest in, outside of a few, you know, New England pass catchers to kind of mix in.
Yeah, I feel pretty similarly. It's hard for me to see this game where the upside lies, right? I think the best case scenario for upside in this game is if the Patriots just kind of went up and down the field and built a big lead, and then Josh Allen could kind of like in scramble comeback mode rack up fantasy points. But I think in general, Julian Edelman's the guy that I'm most excited about on the slate. I think Josh Gordon's probably going to see a lot for Tre'Davious White. And so not a particularly attractive matchup there. With James White back in the mix, it spreads some of the market share around. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not super excited about the upside for this game. I think Edelman is priced fine and probably fine in cash. Burkhead is kind of borderline and probably not necessary on this slate with some of the running back value emerging. So let's kick it over to Baltimore and Cleveland. Baltimore, you know, about a touchdown favorite at home here. Implied total around 26. Cleveland, with an implied total around 19, which – you know, for anyone who's excited about the Cleveland offense coming into the season, I know both Mike Leone and I were. This is a hard dose of reality, the start of the season for Cleveland's offense. They've really struggled. In terms of injury situations, we know, you know, the Browns secondary is really beat up. We talked about we didn't talk about because it wasn't on the main slate, but the, you know, in the industry, it was talked about quite a bit last week that the entire secondary was out to start last week. Most of those guys all missed practice on Wednesday as well, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Demaryius Randall did get back in a full practice as he's coming back from a concussion, but Denzel Ward, Morgan Burnett, Greedy Williams were all sidelined, so that is something to keep an eye on. Odell Beckham was noted on the injury report, but practiced fully with the hip issue, so I think he's fine. On the Ravens side, Mark Andrews missed practice on Wednesday. He obviously ended up being sort of a game time decision last week, and that was something to pay attention to. It's like he still played his normal snap workload. He was still targeted relatively similarly, so I don't think it really impacted his performance much in terms of the opportunity set, but it's certainly something to pay attention to. In terms of from a fantasy perspective, we know Baltimore has been a team that has been heavily targeted early in the season. Will that continue for you this week, Ricky?
I think so. I mean, this Cleveland team with the propensity to turn the ball over, they have been an above-average rush defense to this point, but I still feel pretty good about, you know, Lamar Jackson specifically. I mean, what's there not to like here against Cleveland? They've been a good rush defense against your typical teams, Lamar Jackson is anything but typical here. I mean, 31.2% of the market share of rushing touchdowns. He has gotten to be expensive, but he can get things done in all sorts of ways. And I watched a tape breakdown. I forgot who it was in the offseason. I want to give proper credit. But the fact that Lamar Jackson last year and the team was so predictably run heavy on first down, and the fact that they've gotten they've opened the playbook on first down has just made this team borderline impossible to cover. So I think that that kind of, you know, goes into this week. I think the intriguing part is what to do with the run back. And Nick Chubb is probably a guy that we should talk about, who played a ton of snaps last week, 97%. They said they don't, quote, don't want him playing that many snaps this week. But in a divisional game, I find it hard to believe they'll be wanting to take him off the field. This Baltimore team has fared really well against the run so far. I mean, they've been an upper echelon defense. But what I noticed last year in some of those, you know, tournament breakdowns was the way to win, you know, high field GPP tournaments was to take guys in difficult matchups. I mean, you saw LeSean McCoy run on this team last week. Wouldn't be surprised if they feed Nick Chubb early and often, and because of the volume, he is able to get it done. So I think he is one of my favorite tournament plays on this slate. I know it is, you know, not the ideal game environment with them playing from behind, but I still have some faith here on him in the run back. So I think I'm going to boost him heavily in Lamar Jackson lineups and see how it goes.
Yeah, so let's talk through that. The quote around the coaching staff was that they don't expect him to play nearly 100% of snaps every week as he did against the Rams, basically. Right. Which I think, you know, is kind of like, whatever, of course. Like, right? Like, exactly. Of course you don't expect somebody to play that much. So I don't think it's a big deal. You're, as a Cleveland team, you're 1-2 on the road in Baltimore. Like, this is a huge, huge game. So I would expect really condensed snap and opportunity shares, like we saw last week for Cleveland against the Rams, where they had four skill players play more than 90% of the snaps, and they had five skill players play more than 79% of the snaps, everybody else on the team below 20%, basically. So they were really condensed in terms of the opportunity share last week, and I think that makes it so that there's hope for someone emerging even amidst a relatively low implied total, because the production could be so concentrated. And so I think Odell Beckham, I think Nick Chubb, I think Jarvis Landry and Demetrius Harris are all viable bring back situations. I have no interest in stacking Cleveland as a whole. I do respect Baltimore's defense, and I think Cleveland is dealing with some offensive line issues that's going to take some time for them to sort out. On the Baltimore side, I think Lamar is always going to be one of the highest upside quarterbacks simply because of his skill set. We saw last week he struggled passing the ball, and he still basically got to 20 plus fantasy points because of what he can do on the ground. And so I think that upside is always there. Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown are very clearly the targets. Mark Ingram, early on, it doesn't look like any of the big week performance is going to carry over in terms of ownership. So you might still be able to get him relatively low owned, but I'm not super excited about trying to run on Cleveland's defense in general. So I'm probably restricting this to Lamar with Marquise Brown or Mark Andrews, and then bringing it back with one of those Cleveland skill players. This won't be one of my higher owned stack games, but I think it's a viable sort of stack game. Let's move it to the Chargers and the Dolphins. The big news around the Chargers is obviously the reporting of Melvin Gordon that's expected to happen today. It will not impact his availability for this week four game, but certainly makes it so that, you know, the Chargers have more diversity in their running game kind of going forward to plan on. In terms of injury situations, the Chargers did have a bunch of players miss Wednesday practice. And in these weeks against Miami, I think you always have to, like, be somewhat cognizant of teams doing things that are a little bit more conservative by nature, just because of the strength of the opponent. So we'll have to monitor these as the week goes on. But Travis Benjamin, Mike Williams, Virgil Green all missed practice on Wednesday. That's basically their entire receiving corps, sans Keenan Allen. I guess I shouldn't say that, because I think Keenan Allen has basically been their entire receiving corps this year. So maybe those guys just don't matter at all. On the Miami side, Josh Rosen has an elbow issue, but he was able to practice in full on Wednesday. Unfortunately, still none of his receivers can actually catch the ball, so I don't think it's going to impact him from a fantasy perspective. Allen Hurns missed practice, not a big deal. I don't think there's a ton in terms of injury situation to monitor in terms of viability for this game, other than the Mike Williams, Travis Benjamin, to see if that opens up more playing time. But obviously, any week we have somebody going up against Miami, their offense is something to target. Who are you looking at this week from the Chargers, and are you looking at anyone from the Dolphins?
Wanted to ask you about a trend, which you're going to hate, but backup running backs against Miami so far have, because of the game flow, late in the game have done extremely well. You got Tony Pollard last week with 13 rushes, 103 yards, and a touchdown. The New England game, there was a lot of production for backs late. Where is Burkhead there? 5 for 21, 2 receptions for 47. You had Michelle with the touchdown there. Week 1, Gus Edwards ended up with 17 rushing attempts in that game for 56 yards. What do you think of Justin Jackson this week? Because he was a guy that I was thinking of giving a little boost to if you're going to play that sort of game flow. I mean, at some point, Miami is going to put up somewhat of a fight in this. These spreads are, they're going to be nowhere close to the spread. And one thing I noticed, just to go on a little bit of a different tangent, is there are four defense who have four sacks or less so far. One of them is the Miami Dolphins, which is not shocking. The Los Angeles Chargers are one of the other teams. So,
yeah, that is very surprising.
Go ahead.
So in terms of Justin Jackson, we did move a little bit of market share in his direction in anticipation of, you know, some of that stuff happening with Miami. I will note though that, like, if Tony Pollard doesn't break off like a 20-yard run to score there, he's completely irrelevant on the DFS slate, even though he got a lot more opportunities and he was efficient with them. Like, if he went 12 for 80 and no touchdowns, like 8 to 10 DraftKings points or 8 to 10 FanDuel points isn't going to do anything for you on the slate. So I think it's a tricky spot. I think Jackson is cheap enough on DraftKings to consider, but the early ownership projections actually have him with a little bit of ownership. And so I don't think I'll play it much. Eckler is interesting because the price tag is up now. And I think the conversation that we just have to have in general is, what is the upside against Miami from the skill players, and how does it impact things? And I think what we've seen so far is the incredible amount of efficiency has still allowed there to be that upside in condensed offenses, right? Like Marquise Brown hit for that upside. Last week, Amari Cooper hit for that upside. And Zeke still went over 100. If he just happens to get one of those touchdowns instead of Dak, a rushing touchdown or whatever, he has a big day that we're all excited about. I think you have to be cognizant of the price that you're paying, and that's certainly an issue with both Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler. But this is a condensed offense, right? Like, almost all of the opportunity set is running through those two guys. So I still feel like these two guys can hit their ceilings in GPPs. I think the challenge is that they're going to be extremely owned. So it's going to be a tough situation to feel like you're leveraging anything against the field without taking substantial risks. So I will probably end up somewhat neutral in terms of my exposure to these guys. On the Miami side, I'm really not interested in anybody. The Chargers side is interesting from the defensive standpoint, because they're obviously, everybody at this point against Miami is going to project as their top defense on the slate. And I will have exposure, but the sites are getting aggressive with pricing these teams against Miami. And I know this is a joke from the Levitard show, which I love so much, but, you know, Philip Rivers, it seems like every time you turn on the game, Philip Rivers is, you know, down a score starting at his own 20-yard line with 2 minutes left in the game in the fourth quarter. And I don't know if that'll be the case this week in Miami, but it feels like every single week of the season, that's the situation for Philip Rivers. The Chargers tend to play to their opponents quite a bit. So I will say that I like Keenan Allen and I like Eckler. I probably won't like them more than the field, and I feel a little bit stuck on the hole in the game in terms of upside.
I'm right there with you. The only thing I would add is, because you didn't even go back far enough with the sample, is that Mark Ingram sample from week one as well.
Yeah.
So really, the backs and receivers have been able to reach their ceilings if you can, you know, if you take into consideration that Zeke easily could have scored a touchdown.
Yeah. All right, let's move it to Kansas City and Detroit. And this is amazing to me that this is Patrick Mahomes' first indoor game. Wow. It seems wild that Patrick Mahomes has been able to do all these things without playing indoors at all. But the Chiefs are 6.5-point favorites. They have an implied total over 30 once again. In terms of the injury news, Damian Williams did not practice on Wednesday, so we'll continue to monitor that situation. LeSean McCoy was limited. I think after seeing LeSean McCoy kind of play through stuff last week, a limited practice on Wednesday suggests to me that he is totally fine. I think if there were any injury issues at all, they would probably just give him practice days off entirely. Tyreek Hill still not ready, although there were some reports last week that he was kind of, you know, bouncing around the locker room a little bit. It seems like that's still going to be a few weeks away on the Kansas City side. On the Detroit side, Danny Amendola missed practice on Wednesday. That's something to keep an eye on. Darius Slay was limited, you know, one of their better corners. Not a ton in terms of offensive injury issues here. This is a game that I think will garner a lot of interest in terms of GPP stacks and in tournaments, because the Chiefs always do. Where do you think, in terms of the games that you're focused on this week, Ricky, where do you think think this one ranks?
Well, any game with Patrick Mahomes is obviously top three, but I think this is firmly top two for me this week because not only do I like Kansas City here, but I am really excited about this combination of projection and ownership projection on Kerryon Johnson. I don't know how you feel here, but this is a team that is graded as the worst run defense in all of football in Kansas City. If you saw them last week, Lamar Jackson was throwing up prayers. Their pass defense didn't look so great either. And Kerryon Johnson is just 5,400. I know Ty Johnson has had a little bit of a role so far, but that combination of, you know, his 68% market share of rushing TDs, he's involved in the passing game as well, and he's priced like, you know, a low-end RB2. That really excites me here in a game where Detroit is within about a touchdown of Kansas City at home. I think they're going to try and rely on him early and often, especially if you've watched tape of Kansas City. So there, to me, is a very logical run back guy in most of the lineups, and that's before we even get to the pass catching options. But the fact that he is, you know, popping off the page for us and is under 10% owned, it just screams a guy that I'm going to be all over this week.
This is amazing, Ricky. First, the Trey Quinn GBP pivot. Now you're trusting the projections when there's a low ownership guy. I don't know who this guy is, but I'm enjoying this podcast very much. Kerryon Johnson last week saw his snap share jump up to 75%. I think that's an important thing to note with the release of CJ Anderson, that basically they went from kind of a three running back situation that they were trying to figure out because CJ Anderson was around, you know, 25% of the snaps the first 2 weeks, to 75% Kerryon Johnson, 20% Ty Johnson, and then 9% J.D. McKissic. Some of those are special team snaps as well for McKissic. So basically it went to a two-man show, and I think that's a big deal. And I think not only, you know, from the matchup perspective, but just the opportunity set in general for Kerryon Johnson. I think a lot of people are going to go to Kenny Golladay in this game, which makes perfect sense. Like, he's priced below 6,000 on DraftKings. It's a very favorable price tag. Obviously, if you're going to bring back options on the Detroit side, I think Golladay is the biggest play guy. Interesting to me that Marvin Jones is projected for almost no ownership, and he is priced up with Kerryon in Golladay on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's a little bit more affordable. He's not a guy that's going to pop a ton in projections because the opportunity set has been rather limited, but he had a relatively good game last week, and I think he's another bring-back option. TJ Hockenson is a guy that, you know, has totally fallen out of favor in the public after that big first game against Arizona. And since Arizona has continued to give it up to tight ends, I think people are now questioning whether TJ Hockenson is the real deal or whether that was just Arizona inflated first game of the season. But his snap share has been really consistent. I think there's a lot of ways to play this game. And I think on the Kansas City side, obviously, you know, we'll see how the running back situation develops throughout the week. We're currently expecting Damian Williams not to play, and so we're expecting a little bit more of that share between LeSean McCoy and Darrell Williams that we saw last week, which I think at their current price tags makes it difficult to invest in either one of those players. I think the guy that, for me, is going to be my primary play on Kansas City is Sammy Watkins. 2 weeks in a row with Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson stuff, it's eventually going to turn. The opportunity has clearly been there for Sammy Watkins, both in terms of air yards and in terms of market share of targets. I think this week is the week to invest in Sammy Watkins. I hope it's another one of those explosion-type weeks that we saw in week one, but I think he will be my primary stack target alongside Travis Kelce with Patrick Mahomes.
I don't have too much to add there, honestly.
All right, perfect. Yeah. Let's move it on to Tennessee and Atlanta, a game amongst two teams that I don't think anyone in the world has any idea what kind of performance you're going to get week to week between these two teams. Such inconsistency from them. Atlanta is a 4-point favorite at home here, modest total in the mid 40s. In terms of injury situations, the Delanie Walker is dealing with a knee issue that, you know, caused him to miss practice on Wednesday. But again, older veteran tight ends, I don't get too worried about missing practice early in the week. So just something to keep an eye on. Ito Smith was not out there for the Falcons on Wednesday. He, you know, missed last week's game with a concussion, or was, you know, suffered the concussion early in last week's game and missed the rest of the game. Those will be some situations to follow. Calvin Ridley was on the injury report limited with a hip issue, so that's something to keep an eye on as well. I mean, generally I like dome games and I like Atlanta at home, but I am having a hard time figuring out what to be excited about in this game, because Tennessee just seems to play really slow and kind of slow the games down as a whole, and their offense is spread out enough that outside of Derrick Henry and Delanie Walker, I don't have anybody that I, you know, I'm going to get excited about over there. Julio Jones is just coming off this big, big performance, and the price tag is back up a little bit. It's not anything that would be concerning, but I think ownership will certainly be there. I think Devonta Freeman is kind of interesting at really, really low ownership if Ito Smith just sits, just because they've been so reluctant to even activate Brian Hill or Quadri Allison after decent preseasons from them. So there's workload upside for Devonta Freeman. Calvin Ridley's got a decent price tag, but I don't have much in this game that I like. Is there anything that you like in this game, Ricky?
So I agree with you on Devonta Freeman. I think this Tennessee Titans run defense looked better than it should have last week because Jacksonville's run blocking is just so terrible. I had like a tweet tirade about how awful they looked and they couldn't protect for Fournette. But one guy I am excited about here is Delanie Walker. And that's a guy I am personally going to give a boost, I think, in the market share of targets department this week. Because you look at Atlanta, and I'll be an open book here. I bet on the Falcons last week, so I watched them very closely at a casino close to my house. And this defense cannot tackle, and tight ends run free against them. I mean, you look at their game log so far. They had a game against Minnesota, who does not care about their tight ends. They were not targeted. One target for Rudolph in that game. But the last two teams that do incorporate their tight end, Zach Ertz had 16 targets against this team, caught 8 of them. And then last week, there were 10 total targets to tight ends. There were 9 receptions for an average of close to 15 yards per catch. And these are not guys who are speed demons. I mean, Jack Doyle was like 12 yards a catch. Eric Ebron over 15. I think this is a game where Delanie Walker can run free. You've got Keanu Neal hurt as well now, which just makes a bad tackling defense even worse. And I think Delanie Walker, you know, clearly the leader in the market share of targets, 24% so far. We've got him down at 20. I think if you boost him to his season average, he's going to project well. And I just think this is, you know, everyone knows Arizona has been horrible against tight ends because they've given up like 25 DraftKings points to everyone. This one hasn't been quite as obvious, and it's just something that I noticed. So Delanie Walker specifically is the guy that I'm excited about here. Otherwise, I'm kind of on the same excitement level as you.
The only other play I'll note, Falcons defense. We saw Tennessee, you know, Marcus Mariota is going to take a ton of sacks. He just holds the ball forever. I think the Falcons defense is in play. We'll move it over to Seattle and Arizona. And I think after last week, you know, both in terms of what Carolina did against Arizona and in terms of what Russell Wilson did in terms of his performance with Tyler Lockett, I think this is going to be a very, very popular game. Seattle's, you know, basically like 5 to 6 point favorites on the road here. Total in the high 40s. In terms of the injury situation for Seattle, Rashad Penny did not return to practice on Wednesday with that late hamstring injury that he suffered last week in practice. So we'll have to see his situation. God help me if CJ Procise keeps getting on the field. He is like crystal meth for me. I just get a little hit and like I can't get away. I immediately added CJ Procise in like every league that I'm in. I'm obsessed. And it's a big problem. The Cardinals released Michael Crabtree, and then Zamir Bird didn't practice on Wednesday. So that's a situation to monitor because we could get condensed opportunity sets for the Cardinals passing game. What are we doing, Ricky, with this game? Because I think this is going to be one of the games that people are highly excited about attacking.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are going to be excited about attacking the Seattle side just because of how bad Arizona has been. And again, the predictability of their tight end defense so far. I just want to go over the numbers. 7 for 75 and 2 for Olsen last week. Mark Andrews had 112 and a touchdown. TJ Hockenson in week 1 had 131 and a touchdown, and he has been missing on a milk carton since that time. So we've just seen that tight ends have been productive here. I think Will Dissly is going to be one of the higher owned tight ends on the slate. But I don't think you can discount the fact that this Arizona team might break the record for most passing attempts in a season. And the volume on DraftKings, if we're talking about, you know, PPR site, really should make you excited about guys like Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald. Because even in a scenario in which this offense just, you know, throws for 350 and doesn't throw for a touchdown, you could get the 100-yard, you know, bonuses for those kind of players. So Seattle's a team that low-key is a very bad secondary. You know, people think of Seattle as the old, Legion of Boom? And they're just not that anymore. So someone like Christian Kirk is really interesting to me from from this game, especially if the Seattle guys are going to get a majority of the looks. I know you always love Tyler Lockett, so I don't feel a need to talk about him. But I think Christian Kirk specifically is someone that people should be on. And looking at this ownership, it looks a little bit low to me.
Yeah, I think the thing that's exciting here about this game is the both teams have a relatively condensed opportunity set early in the season in terms of where the opportunities, both from a carries perspective and from a targets perspective, are going. And so I think you combine that with the potential for increased pace just because the way that Arizona plays, and you have the recipe for a really nice game stack. I also should say, and obviously this looks stupid in hindsight, but it seems like every week of the season we should be stacking Russell Wilson with somebody no matter what we think the game script is, because if it goes wrong, Russell Wilson is freaking amazing, and we know where the ball's going. It's going to Tyler Lockett. It's going a little bit to DK Metcalf and Will Disley, and they're very easy to stack. So obviously, like, in retrospect now, with hindsight being 2020 and seeing Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett stacks win everybody all the money last week in a game where we thought Seattle was going to play from ahead and kind of run this boring offense, we have to recognize the fragility in our projections, both on a player opportunity level, but also in a pace of play level. And so any time that we get Seattle sped up, they're going to be extremely valuable offensively. And so I think you should take chances on that. Regardless, I think people will be expecting Seattle to get sped up because of the way that Arizona plays. So I think Russell Wilson will be a very popular play. I think he'll often be paired with Tyler Lockett. I think Will Disley, I have not seen as much hype around a tight end pretty much at any point in this year than Will Disley. So I think he's going to be monstrously owned. We have him as like a fine play, but not like the play that he's getting talked about. So I'm a little bit terrified of getting destroyed by Will Disley. But I think it's obviously a really good spot for Seattle's offense. The one guy we haven't mentioned that I want to talk about, though, is Chris Carson. Obviously, we had really big projections on Carson. He was my biggest disappointment in my cash game lineup last week. Similarly to kind of the opposite side of that Russell Wilson equation, where the game script went bad and then Chris Carson wasn't on the field. It was a lot of CJ Procise, who's the more natural fit from a pass catching perspective for that offense. Are you going to go back to the well with Chris Carson if Rashad Penny's out again this week?
Yes. Simple answer. I mean, yeah, the fumbling is terrifying. Do not get me wrong, but I think the upside is worth it, seeing that I think if there were no fumbles, it still would have been the Chris Carson show, and I had boosted him personally to around like 70% of the market share, and then the fumble happened and they just kind of gave up on him. So I hope he gets a clean slate to start, because the matchup is ripe and you got a 27 implied total on the road. I think I'm completely fine going back to him, knowing, like you mentioned, there is some fragility to that projection for sure.
Yeah, I was just concerned that like early ownership projections still have him with healthy ownership, and that's kind of annoying to me. The DFS industry is playing a little bit sharper these days. In past years, that might be a little bit lower. I did want to mention, you brought up Christian Kirk. He was featured in Mike Leone's expected receiving PPR points GPP article that was posted on DailyRoto.com this week. It is premium for our subscribers, but it is a great breakdown on some of the math that Mike uses to highlight differences in production early in the season between players' expected production versus their actual production, highlighting some potential value opportunities, and Christian Kirk was on that list. So if you're a premium subscriber, make sure to check that out. If you're not, use that promo code LAUNCH to get yourself 10% off and join us for the season. We'll move over to Tampa Bay and the Los Angeles Rams. Rams 10-point favorites at home here against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay games, we talked about it last week. They, coming into the season, they were games that we expected would be heavily targeted in terms of game stack situations. I think this is another situation where that will be the case, because the Rams offense is one that people are going to want to target. But this is some big injury situations to monitor. Chris Godwin showed up on the injury report with a hip issue, did not practice on Wednesday. Early reports while recording this on Thursday say he's not out there at practice on Thursday. I think that's a really, really big deal. Because it would open up a lot of opportunity for Mike Evans, but also I think for O.J. Howard.
Yep.
I think Rashad Perryman would certainly get some more opportunities as well. But if Godwin didn't play, man, I would probably play a lot of O.J. Howard, honestly. I think Mike Evans would draw a ton of defensive attention in terms of coverage, and I think it's harder to do that with a tight end. And I think Howard would be the guy that I would be really, really excited to play in GPPs. I don't think he's going to come with much ownership. I think Evans' projection would obviously get boosted if Godwin sat. And I think he'd still be a fine play just on volume alone. But I think it would be one that comes with a lot of ownership. On the Rams side of the ball, not much. Tyler Higbee was able to participate in a limited fashion dealing with a chest injury. That's something we'll have to monitor because our early projections have expected Higbee to be missing time. And that would slightly scale down some of the receiving options. But with a nearly 30 implied total for the Rams, there's going to be plenty of plays on that side of the ball too.
Yeah, and Goff has been bad so far, so I think people are going to be off him. But it's pretty clear if you're playing Goff, it's a minimum two of his receiver rule. Because if Goff is going to get you there, he's going to need 300 and at least multiple touchdowns. So minimum two, Cooks, Kupp, and Robert Woods, and call it a day there. But I just want to go to the Tampa Bay side for a second. Not on Jameis Winston, but I think what you were saying is correct in, you know, the O.J. Howard, Mike Evans analysis. And their receiving rates so far are basically in line with the analysis from preseason in that, you know, Winston has had more success targeting Godwin and O.J. Howard than he has with Mike Evans. You know, his career QB rating heading into this year was around 82 targeting Evans. It was 94 targeting Godwin, and it was 120 targeting O.J. Howard. You look at the reception rate so far this year, Drew, 77.8% for Howard, 73% for Godwin, 50% for Mike Evans, and by the way, 27% for Breshad Perriman, who I just don't think is very good. So I think it's playing out exactly as we thought it would. And if you take Chris Godwin out of the equation, I think now we do get heavy O.J. Howard. And again, in the limited times he has targeted him this year, he has been successful, sort of like his career. So I would get excited about him overall, not excited about Tampa, but I think that would set up pretty well for him.
Yeah, I think in GPPs and MME, I think Breshad Perriman under those circumstances also would be worth a flyer just because of the way that he's historically been used, which is really far down the field, and he's really cheap. I would not trust him. I don't believe I'd have to run projections to see, but I don't believe I'd trust him in like a cash game situation, even though he's very cheap. But I do think from a tournament perspective in MME, he would be in the mix. And totally agree with you with the Rams side of the ball. I'm not super interested in the running game right now, but you know, the receivers all look like they're coming with modest ownership. The price tags are up a little bit across the industry on them. But I think Cooks and Woods are the guys that I'd rather be on than Kupp right now, even though Kupp has this dominant market share of targets, just because I think you'll usually get them at a fraction of the ownership. We'll see if that's the case. Right now, it looks like it's projected somewhat similarly. But Woods was another one of those candidates Mike highlighted in his article about potential bounce backs. Two more games to cover. One that is, I mean, both these games actually aren't that interesting from a DFS perspective, but let's get to it. Denver and Jacksonville. Jacksonville traveling to Denver here, 3.5-point underdogs. Both of these teams with implied totals below 21. Is there, I guess I should cover news and notes before I ask you if there's anyone you're interested at all. Jalen Ramsey's not with the team. Who knows when he's ever going to return again? He's left the team to be, I believe, to deal with a parenting situation with the birth of his child. He's also got a back injury, supposedly. He obviously has demanded a trade, so who knows if he's ever coming back. Receiver Chris Conley was limited in practice due to a knee injury. The Broncos are going to be without slot cornerback Bryce Callahan, who's a very, very good slot cornerback, has a foot issue, dealt with some foot issues at the end of last year, too. So that's a little bit of a concern. In terms of on the offensive side, Royce Freeman and Emmanuel Sanders were limited, but early week limited practices aren't a big concern for me. So I don't expect many injury situations here. Any DFS appeal for you on Jacksonville or Denver, Ricky?
Well, Drew, as you know, when I bang my head against the wall and it doesn't work, I like to do that 750 more times with Leonard Fournette. Yep. And I'm going to go back to the Leonard Fournette, you know, well this week. I mean, this is a guy getting the opportunity, and he has not been bad with his opportunity. 4.4 yards a rush, that was heavily on that late, you know, long rush from Leonard Fournette, which you could argue was lucky. You could also argue it was unlucky that he got tripped up at the end of that because he had one man to beat and barely did not beat him.
Let's not go back there because that only cost me like $70,000 in showdown. So I don't want to talk about it. So let's move forward.
So 8 targets, 6 targets, 6 targets is 3 weeks. 2 of the 3 weeks, he's been at least 4.5 yards of rush. The offensive line stinks. Do not get me wrong, but this Denver team, according to Pro Football Focus, a league average tackling defense. And when you have that sort of volume, at some point, I know people like laugh at that sort of analysis with Leonard Fournette, but one of these weeks, the Fournette people are going to be the ones laughing with him, you know, getting that sort of passing volume and the volume he gets in the rushing game. He will fall into the end zone by accident. He will eclipse, you know, 100 yards, whether receiving or rushing yards by accident, and I want to be on him that week. I know this Denver defense has rated well against the run, but I think Leonard Fournette is just about it for me, and I am fine, you know, going back to this well, knowing that there's a very decent chance that it's more of the same.
I totally agree. Once again, Fournette priced down for the opportunity set. He basically has a similar opportunity set to all of the top workhorse backs in the league. Obviously, the overall scoring environment isn't going to be good. Jacksonville's offense isn't as good. Their offensive line is really, really struggling. Unfortunately, it looks like the field is onto this as well. Fournette priced below 6,500 on FanDuel, but with an ownership projection above 20% early on. It looks like people are going to play Fournette. That doesn't concern me. I think he's still a really good player for the volume that he's getting, but it does make me less excited in the sense that I think normally, given the lack of production early in the season, you might see this guy closer to 10%, and it looks like he's going to be closer to 20%. I think DJ Chark is probably a little bit overpriced. DD Westbrook, not a situation I'm super excited to attack in terms of this Jacksonville passing offense. I think Philip Lindsay's earned enough of a role, and especially in the passing game, to pretty much say he's a fine play at 5,500 or below each and every week, and that's the case again. I'm shocked that his early ownership projection comes with almost nothing, given the big performance last week, the slate winning type of performance from Philip Lindsay. So I think he's certainly still in the mix. Manny Sanders isn't super expensive. Neither is Cortland Sutton. And obviously the Jags secondary takes a big hit without Jalen Ramsey. So I think those guys are viable in MME. Not a game stack situation for me. Probably not a lot of cash game plays here. I think Fournette being the most likely one. So I think we can move it on to our final game of the slate, which is this Minnesota-Chicago game. Minnesota traveling to the Bears. Slight underdogs here at 2, 2.5, depending on where you're looking. Both teams with implied totals below 20, so not a lot of offensive intrigue here by the odds makers. In terms of injuries, the Vikings are healthy on the offensive side of the ball, with the exception of Josh Klein, their guard, who suffered a concussion in Sunday's game, and we'll see if he clears protocol on the defensive side. Anthony Barr, who missed last week's game, practiced on Wednesday and was limited, as was Mackenzie Alexander. The Bears have a little bit more on the injury front in a shorter week after the Monday night game, but Bobby Massey, who is a surprise inactive, their right tackle, did practice on Wednesday. He was dealing with some sort of vertigo or dizziness illness. So that's a good situation there. Trey Burton and Kyle Long also practiced. But on the there were some injury issues for the Bears. Taylor Gabriel didn't practice. Eddie Pinheiro didn't practice. Eddie Jackson was limited. And then Akeem Nicks and Bilal Nichols, two of their really good interior defensive players, didn't practice. Again, it's Wednesday, and it's Wednesday after a Monday night game, so it's even going to be more lenient on the practice stuff. So it's something to pay attention to. Specifically for me, the Akeem Nicks and the Bilal Nichols situation, because, you know, if those two guys were to miss, the Bears certainly have a ton of defensive line depth, but it would be challenged. And I don't think this game is going to be a game situation that gets away from Minnesota, where they would be forced to abandon the running game in any shape or form. And again, the way the DFS industry has changed is wild. But, you know, 3 years ago, after Dalvin Cook had delivered, you would not see a projected ownership sub 10%, no matter what the price tag was in this situation. There's a chance that he's low owned here. There's a chance that the Bears defense is banged up, and that's a chance that I would be interested in potentially targeting. But that's really the only situation from this game. There's not much for me, Ricky. Is there anything for you here?
No. I mean, even the Bears defense isn't that interesting to me because of how run heavy Minnesota is. This is projecting to be a slow paced game and just not a ton of dropbacks for the Bears to, you know, rack up their usual interceptions, sacks, etc. So it's really Dalvin Cook if you want to play him in tournaments or nothing for me. I mean, this is just a very unappealing game.
Maybe some Allen Robinson. We'll see what the Taylor Gabriel situation is, as that, you know, he's dealing with a concussion. He's really cheap after that huge week. And obviously, if he sat, that would open up opportunity for Anthony Miller, who we just haven't seen on the field at all this year. So maybe some opportunity there. But I think this is going to be more of a defensive-oriented game and one that is not super DFS-friendly. With that, Ricky, we've gotten through the 12 games. Any closing thoughts that you have for this wonderful Week 4 main slate?
Any closing thoughts? I wouldn't be afraid to go against the grain on this slate. It looks like there are some chalky spots that both you and I agreed were not the greatest. I mean, my Sanders Studs article will be out tomorrow, and I think I'm going to go with some of these low-owned plays as my sort of building blocks for tournaments this week. I think this is a very good week where we can see the public overreacting on a few different spots. Dalvin Cook having 5% ownership, maybe potentially being one of them. I don't know. I'm excited about this slate. Still excited about the Giants. And I'm happy we got this done, by the way, in under an hour, which if you listened last week was a huge underdog.
A huge underdog. We really sharpened things up this week. Got down to work. And you know, one less game always helps. So we want to thank all of you out there for listening to this podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, and review. Help us keep this podcast free for you with these game breakdowns on the flagship edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. The Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast will be back tomorrow with Davis Maddock and a guest making some picks against the spread. Best of luck in all your games this week.